This is the Patriots All 22 podcast on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider of audio video coverage for the five-time Super Bowl champion New England Patriots.
Welcome into a new edition of the Patriots All 22 podcast brought to you by the CLNS Media Podcast Network. I'm Evan Lazar, joined as always by Adam Kirchen, and we have a very special guest today. It is Seth Kayser from The Athletic, Kansas City, one of the best film breakdown guys on Twitter, especially for the Chiefs, where I know that he has Chiefs Kingdom wrapped around his finger. And in October, Seth, when we talked about that matchup back then in the regular season, I had a funny feeling that we're going to have you on the podcast again for this championship game.
Yeah, I think we all kind of knew, especially after the way that game went down. I mean, it was such a thriller. It was so much fun. That was a game I wasn't even, you know, it didn't end the way that I would have liked to have seen it end, but it was just such an objectively fun game that I didn't really care that much. Yeah. Like, and I imagine you might have felt the same way had it gone the other way. It's like, man, that was fun though.
Yeah, Mahomes in the second half was one of the best quarterback halves. He was making throws that I just like have never seen anybody make before. Right. And, you know, just like throwing the ball across his body on a line, like 30 yards down the field. Yeah. And, like, it was just like, all right, you know, this guy is like, he's an alien. Like, he's just officially an alien. And you don't like really understand. I was telling Adam before you jumped on that I watched the Chiefs warm up on the sideline because they let us go down there before the game. And I just wanted to watch Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce move, just how fast they were. Yeah. And they are just a different speed. Like they are in the lower bodies on Tyreek Hill, especially his thighs, you can see the explosion. Like you can see why the guy runs a 4.2. Watching them warm up just like in light pads and stuff like that, I was just like, oh my God, this is like a track meet out here.
They're a very unique team with a unique buildup. Hill is definitely a unique player. He's built differently than a lot of those smaller receivers. He's extremely thick, very muscular. Yeah. That's one reason why I don't worry too much about him being too small and stuff. Jams don't bother him as much as some guys. And he's one of the few players you could ever compare to like prime Randy Moss. Like that alternate speed that just looks and makes NFL defenders look slow. They're weird. And so if you got to watch him warm up, did you sit down and watch Mahomes do his arm loosening up thing that he does?
Yeah,
he starts bombing 70-80 yard
yeah things. So I was watching them just kind of warm up, and even Kelce just surprised me because of how the combination of size and speed. I mean, he's 6'6" and he just running like a 4.5, and you're just like, this combination just doesn't make sense in science. And then Mahomes is out there and he's just like goofing off. Like his warm up is very kind of reminds me a little bit of like Steph Curry. Like he's just like kind of like running around, just like throwing up half court shots and like hitting shots from like the tunnel going into the locker room and like, just like having a good time. And that was kind of Mahomes. And it's just such a contrast and obviously just different styles altogether with Brady. But Brady's just all business. You know, he gets out there and he's like, balls to the wall. Like I'm going to make the throws I'm going to make in the game and I'm going to be very focused. Whereas Mahomes is just kind of having fun in warm ups. And obviously it works for both guys. So it's really not, a problem for either one.
I think that's what happens when you have a guy who's 40 and a guy who's 23.
Yeah, it's and the other thing we were talking about earlier is about Hill is, Reed uses him right. He doesn't just throw the ball to him. The touchdown run he had this past weekend. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that you want to do with a guy like that, because if he's being taken out of the game somehow in the passing game, just give him the ball and watch him go. I mean, that is never like a risky proposition. He runs the ball like a running back too. So he's got great vision. He knows how to just plant his foot and go. So I think he's just one of those guys you have to always know where he is. I mean, that's sort of a cliche, but the thing about the Chiefs is they have way more than just one guy like that.
Right. Yeah. The offense has been, it's been one of the most efficient offenses of all time this year. It's been a lot of fun to watch, a lot of fun to write about, a lot of fun to break down. It's kind of been like a, a real sum of the parts kind of year where everything just kind of came together the way fans always think it will before the season starts.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. So we do have some topics we want to go over, even though we could gush about the Chiefs offense and their warmups for the next 20 minutes too. But I wanted to ask you, you know, a lot has changed with both of these teams, obviously, since week six back in October. It's basically like a whole new season at this point. Some players in that game that weren't even in the game before and all that kind of stuff. But with Mahomes in particular, how have you seen him improve? Because it sounds to me, and from watching him too, he's somehow got better. Than in the beginning of the year. I didn't think that he would get any better than what he was in that game in week six. But how have you seen him improve?
The biggest thing with him is that every week it seems like he gets just a little bit better in terms of pre-snap recognition. That is something that Belichick was able to take advantage of with him, especially in the first half. Belichick did his usual stuff. You know, there were some snaps that I really enjoyed. He had seven guys on the line of scrimmage all standing, and just a lot of different zone drops and blitzes, and Belichick's so great at disguising. That's something that's given Mahomes problems all year. He's a young quarterback. There's only so much that he's seen. He's getting better throughout the season in pre-snap reads, recognizing blitzes. You don't see quite as many take him by surprise, but it still happens. It happened against the Colts a couple times. The second thing that's changed the most is he has become a little more contained in terms of knowing when to hold them and, you know, knowing when to fold them. He, a good example of this would be with about 9 minutes left against the Colts. You know, they're up 17. The defense has been playing great. It was, I think, third and six. They had the ball in their own territory, but relatively close to midfield. And the Colts were able to generate quick pressure. All the routes were downfield except for a curl by Kelce. And there was a safety coming in over the top on that route to where you saw Mahomes look at it and you could just see the wheels turning and thinking, I could make that throw.
Yeah.
and he probably could, but there was some pressure there. His feet weren't set and it's a risky proposition. And you saw him think about it and said he tucked the ball, tried to run out of the pocket, and a Colts defender was able to bring him down for a sack. You know, that's the type of play that Alex Smith used to make all the time and it drove people nuts. But with Mahomes, you wanted to see that a little more often. And the week six game against you guys in particular was a great example, because the second pick that he threw near the end of the half was one of those situations where he shouldn't have thrown it at all. And so that's an area he's improved in terms of not taking quite as many risks. Still takes way more than most quarterbacks. But I'm glad.
I would too with that arm strength. You know, if you could throw, make every throw like he can, then you know you kind of live with some of them, right? You know, because some of the great ones are obviously going to go for big plays. But that play right before the half against the Patriots, the Daron Harmon interception, was the one when you were describing that I was like exactly thinking about, because that was a throw that if you go back in that game, you know, they kick a field goal there and they get 3 points before the half. You never know what happens, you know, in the second half of that game, especially the way that the Chiefs offense came out after Reed made some adjustments in the locker room at halftime. So that was a big sequence there for the Patriots defense to not only shut, you know, save a touchdown, but actually take points off the board altogether.
Absolutely.
And that was one of those throws that, you know, you kind of saw, okay, maybe in that point in time, and as well as maybe the Dante Hightower interception early on in the game when he jumped the slant, you kind of saw maybe Belichick's disguising and the mastery of Bill Belichick kind of turning the gears a little bit too quickly for Mahomes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I agree with that from what I've seen from Mahomes. And going back to that Rams game, he did have three interceptions that game. But since then, what, six games, two interceptions.
Yep.
That's the thing that will take a guy like Mahomes from he's obviously already great. But, like, you know, if a guy like Mahomes can do that and have better decision-making, he'll be, you know, in another stratosphere when it comes to the type of player he is. And I sort of noticed, like, you know, he doesn't – it's not like he is a check down quarterback or he'll never be that, but like he's more willing to do that than he was at the beginning of the season. It felt like at the beginning of the season, he trusted his arm so much. He was just like, you know what? I can do this. And like we've been saying a lot this year, like 9 times out of 10, he can, but you know, there's always that one time that it could really hurt you. So I've noticed that progression too. It's fun to watch with him.
Yeah, and you have that poise, you know, we were saying this too, Adam, to in your first ever playoff game, you go up right away on a team that is pretty good in the Indianapolis Colts. Obviously, they didn't really play like it last week, but they were a good team this year.
Yeah.
And it just didn't seem too big for them. I'm very interested to see, you know, against Belichick and Brady with a chance to go to the Super Bowl, how he reacts to that. But it almost reminds you a little bit of in that sense only, of a young Brady in his second year in the league taking the Patriots to the Super Bowl, where it never really caught up to him. You know, it never was too big for him, and he's able to just kind of handle playing in playoff games. All right, so the next one here, obviously Kareem Hunt has been in all Patriots fans' nightmares for the last 2 years, because they just seem to not be able to, you know, get that guy on the ground, especially in the passing game. He's absolutely carved them up. Now the Patriots, similar to how the Chiefs won't have to deal with Josh Gordon, the Patriots will not have to deal with Kareem Hunt. How have you seen the offense change? Because Damian Williams has stepped in pretty nicely here and is almost keeping that running game at least basically at the same level statistically.
Right. Statistically speaking, they've been actually a more efficient offense since Hunt was cut. Now, in my opinion, that's one of the examples of how statistics don't tell the whole story. With Hunt, without Hunt, it's a little bit of a different ball game, because Hunt has that ability, like you talked about, to break tackles and do things that very few other running backs can do. Williams, in an interesting way, and you know, you're only a few games into it, so it's tough to say whether it's something that's sustainable. But in an interesting way, Williams so far has almost been a better fit, oddly enough, because he's extremely fast. He runs exceptional routes. And so with what the Chiefs have been doing with kind of this, you know, West Coast meets college spread hybrid they've been doing, you know, they motion him out of the backfield like twice as often as they motioned Hunt, because he can run routes extremely effectively. And he can, you know, you just run a simple go route. Not that they never had Hunt do that, but it wasn't as often. And so he's been able to be really effective. He played really well against the Colts. The biggest difference with him, I would say, is when the blocking isn't there. Kareem Hunt, even when the blocking wasn't there, usually gained at least a couple yards. Mm-hmm. Whereas with Williams, he'll probably lose two or three, because he doesn't always go north-south like he should. And the difference between second and eight and second and 13 is substantial. So those are the times where it hurts them. He does help them, though, in terms of diversifying their passing game even more. Now, again, whether that's sustainable, we'll see, because I think he's a more limited player than Hunt. But so far, it hasn't hurt them. And if anyone can find a way to take advantage of the fact that Hunt's gone, I'm assuming it'll be Belichick.
Yeah, when I watch them without Hunt, the thing about Hunt that really stuck out is that if he got behind you, you weren't catching him. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I don't get that same sense of a burst from Williams. But I do – and I agree with you there that like Hunt picks up those yards, those extra yards that most running backs, not just Williams, don't get. You know, I think he was special with the ball on his hands. But the thing is it doesn't mean the offense isn't like effective. You know what I mean? Like he's played much better than I thought anybody would in Hunt's absence. I thought when Hunt went down, I thought, okay, part of me was like, all right, well, that's it for that offense. I don't know why I put so much on Hunt's shoulders, just because he was so good. But like, I was like, okay, well, they're not quite the same anymore. But there's that offense, I don't think is taking a step back like I expected. It's, you know, but Hunt to me is the better player, obviously, and so he's just so explosive. It takes that element out of it, of another guy that can take it to the house. But obviously Williams is somebody that, you know, is very serviceable in that role, and he's just been, you know, more than serviceable. But you know, where I think it'll affect him the most is just that having another breakaway threat as opposed to just another good player.
Yeah, maybe this is just a little bit of Patriots, you know, glasses creeping in here, because we've seen Hunt create those explosive plays against the Pats so many times that over the last 2 years that's like kind of what stands out to you. But I feel kind of the same way, Seth, and maybe you can correct us, but it just doesn't feel like Williams is as explosive, and I don't worry about him taking a little wheel route 75 yards to the house in the same way that Hunt could, or a screen pass, or it just seemed like Hunt, when he had the ball in his hands, was like a runaway freight train. Like once he got that speed built up, there was just no, you couldn't tackle him because he was a beast, and then you couldn't catch him either. So it was kind of just a lethal combination. And you know, we obviously have horrors of him running by Cassius Marsh and running by Jason McCourty. I just don't know if that is the type of player that Damon Williams is necessarily, but like you said, efficiency wise, he might actually be a tad bit better, and statistically at least.
So far, I assume it'll catch up to him, but you guys are right. Hunt did have more explosive plays, and I think it was in part Williams had a bunch of explosive plays against the Colts, but they weren't 70 yarders. I think the difference between the two of them, Hunt was that combination of once he got going, he had a burst and acceleration. Williams is definitely the faster one between the two of them, but he doesn't have that ability to shake a tackle. Hunt did it so quickly. Like, he didn't really get slowed down when shaking tackles, and that allowed him to create more explosive plays. And so I definitely think it's going to play a role, because Hunt has been one of the better performers against the Patriots the last couple of years.
Yeah, he has killed the Patriots, him and Tyreek Hill. The Patriots have not had an answer for either one of them, and we'll talk about Tyreek Hill in a second here, but I wanted to jump over to the defensive side of the ball. And obviously against the Colts, they played a lot better than a lot of people gave them credit for, and they've gotten some guys back from injury. They've benched some guys and put some new faces in there. Yep. Justin Houston coming back is obviously big. Was that a game where the Colts offense was just not at its best, or do you think that this Chiefs defense has really taken a step forward here?
It's tough to say. You know, one game results are always tough to trust. The Chiefs have been better at home all season, even when you factor in strength of competition. Like on the road, they allowed quarterbacks about an average of 10 points higher on their passer rating. At home, about 10 points lower than their average. They did better with yards per play as well. So even when you factor in quality of competition, the Chiefs have been significantly better at home this year on defense. And I think, crowd, all that stuff. I think every defense, for the most part, plays better at home. The Chiefs might uniquely benefit from it, because their only real strength, and they've got some good players here and there, but I mean, they've been lousy mostly across the board on defense. The only place that they've been good all year, and as of the last like 6 weeks since Houston came back from injury, is they really get after the quarterback.
Yeah.
And that was the big matchup against the Colts, because, they only allowed 18 sacks all year, one of the best pass protection units in the game. And I ended up, that was one of the first articles I wrote, is I charted Luck faced some form of pressure disruption on half the snaps he dropped back. And it was a really dominant performance on their part. And I think, and I could be wrong here, but I think the pass rush benefits more than other aspects of the defense at home, with silent counts and you don't have to worry about being drawn off sides, that kind of stuff. It seems to have given them a bit of a boost, and they performed extremely well rushing the passer. And to the extent that the Colts in the fourth quarter, they were still trying to run the ball, just because every time Luck dropped back, he was getting hit or hurried, or they were batting the ball down. So that's the biggest difference between now and when the Chiefs and Patriots played early on, is the presence of Justin Houston. You add that third pass rusher, and everyone benefits across the board. Chris Jones is playing even better. They've got a scary pass rush. Now everything else is in flux, as they say. They've got some new guys in there, Charvarius Ward and Jordan Lucas. Signs are pointing towards Eric Berry playing, which when he's played this year, the two times he's played, he's looked exactly like himself. But that's been the most bizarre story ever. I mean, it's been mostly like a pain management issue and all this. So if he plays, that obviously helps the defense as well. But at the same time, this is still, I mean, they do not perform well against 21 personnel that the Pats put forth a lot. And I don't expect that to completely change. I mean, they performed great against the Colts. I think the Patriots are a different kind of animal. I'd be stunned if they were able to be that dominant again. I can't remember the last time I saw a Brady-led team get dominated like that.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. That's what I've noticed too about Kansas City watching them this year is how much they do get after the quarterback, and the numbers do back it up. I mean, a lot of sacks from those guys on the line, and it, they're physical, like they're not They're not like these necessarily just like guys that can get around the corner and stuff like that. They can throw guys back with their pure strength too. Mm-hmm. That's something that impresses me every time I see them with those particular guys. And, you know, but your point about stopping the run and everything like that, that is something that if I were the Chiefs, I would be trying to figure out
right
what I can do there, because that's kind of what, you know, the Patriots had a ton of success on the ground against a good pass rushing team this past weekend.
Right.
So, you know, in my opinion, that's kind of what I would do if I were the Pats, is just see, okay, let's see if this works again, you know. But, you know, I don't think that's necessarily going to be their whole strategy or anything like that. But, you know, they're definitely going to be like, you know, okay, let's see if these guys can stop this first.
Right.
If we have some success against it, we'll just keep rolling with it.
Yeah, the 21 personnel comment is an interesting one too, because the Patriots ran the ball on the Chiefs the first time around, despite the Chiefs really playing with 7 and 8 man boxes most of the time, and right. They were still able to just run the ball, which is something that the Patriots have been able to do over the last month or so of the season, as well as teams are loading up to stop the run and they're just running it anyways. So yep. It's a very interesting matchup. I think Chris Jones in the middle is the guy that everybody is kind of, you know, D Ford, Justin Houston are kind of the sexy good names on the outside, but he's kind of going to have to be the focal point for everybody, right? He's going to have to disrupt that game from the Kansas City perspective and try to move that interior of the Patriots offensive line to disrupt Brady and not let them run the ball between the tackles. And then also, you know, the Patriots are going to have to block them. So it's going to be interesting to see how the Patriots allocate their resources on the offensive line that had that outstanding game against the Chargers. You know,
yeah.
They put two guys on Chris Jones. Obviously, Shaq Mason is one of the better guards in the league, so they've had a good year out of both of their starting guards. Him and Tooney are both very good players. So I'm very interested to see that matchup. And then D Ford, I mean, as good as Justin Houston is, D Ford has taken such a leap this year compared to the past couple of years. And just the way that he gets off the ball is he is shot out of a cannon every yes. single time the ball is snapped. And then he can bend the arc and do all that good stuff too to finish the job. And that's what leads to all those strip sacks too. And you saw right. him get one against Andrew Luck on Saturday night in the divisional round. So he's a player that smaller pass rusher has given the Patriots tackles some problems, because the Patriots tackles are bigger guys. Obviously right. Trent Brown is a huge guy, and then Marcus Cannon's a bigger guy too. So you put those two guys together, guys like Dante Fowler, for example, who I think D Ford is very similar to, has given the Patriots problems in the past because they can get so low around the edge and they get off the ball so quickly and they make it hard for you to get your hands on them and slow them down that way. So those two guys, I mean, Houston's a great player too, obviously. This pass rush, this D-line of the Chiefs, I tweeted out the other day, it's no joke. I mean, they all the stats back it up and their film backs it up. I'm very interested to see how they play the Patriots in the secondary. Obviously, the Chargers went with a more zone heavy, but actually when I watched the film, they did try to adjust to some man coverage and the Patriots just beat that too. but the Chiefs this year, it seems like have been playing more man coverage maybe than they have in past years. And that formula of pressuring Brady and playing tight man to man is kind of been the formula over the years for beating the Patriots.
Right. If you can pull it off.
Right.
I mean, everyone, it's kind of funny. Everyone that I've spoken with for years says the same thing about the Patriots, which is essentially true of any team. If you can get pressure with four consistently and play good man coverage, Brady can be frustrated and he can be stymied that way. The problem is almost no one has the personnel to consistently pull it off, because Brady's so great at avoiding pressure. He moves around in the pocket so well. That's one reason why I think the Patriots have put an onus on having guys who can separate quickly, like Edelman, who, you know, you don't need to rely on Edelman to get open 30 yards down the field. He's a guy that can separate in under a second and a half to render a pass rush meaningless. You know, if you get the ball out in under 2 seconds, you're fine. That's what I'm assuming the game plan will be. The Chiefs have been primarily a man coverage team. They have throughout Sutton's tenure, it's kind of vacillated back and forth a little bit. This year in particular, the personnel they've had have not done particularly well in zone. So what they've generally done, especially since Charvarius Ward took over as the third corner, but he comes in as the boundary corner and Kendall Fuller moves inside to the slot. They run a lot of press man looks, and zone is kind of a tendency breaker. So I expect them to try to do that and try to get pressure with four. One interesting wrinkle that you guys might want to just keep a lookout for, it'll be interesting to see if it's two games in a row, is Sutton blitzed a little more than what we've been accustomed to seeing against the Colts. I personally wouldn't recommend that against Brady, even if it's a tendency breaker, because Brady generally shreds blitzes. But that might be worth keeping an eye on, because Sutton is known for, he only blitzes like 13% of the time. It's near the lowest in the league. And then suddenly against the Colts in some key situations, they were dialing up some much more creative blitz packages, as well as some stunts and twists, which are almost unheard of in Sutton's defense. They never stunt linemen or even outside linebackers. So that was weird to watch. So it's almost as though the defense was playing so badly 3 weeks ago, 3 or 4 weeks ago, that they're being forced to do some things differently. And they were at the point, they're playing so badly, it's like, God, try anything, because who cares if it sucks? You're already playing awful. And so it should be a little bit of a different look. Ford, I believe the Patriots did real well against Ford in the first meeting this year, but obviously they were allowed to key on him a little bit more with Houston being injured.
Yeah, the point about the creativity in the front seven, that's what we're seeing here in New England. With this Brian Flores iteration of the defense, they've realized, okay, we don't necessarily have the pass rush talent to just rush four straight up against the five offensive linemen and hope to get home. So there's been a lot more blitzes, a lot more line stunts, doing a lot more creative stuff in the front seven. So it's interesting that you say that, because I wonder if a lot of these defensive coordinators, when they aren't playing well defensively, just think, you know what, I'm just going to scheme it. I'm just going to throw the kitchen sink of schemes at this problem, and hopefully we can generate enough of a pass rush that our coverage is, it helps the coverage and so on and so forth, and obviously helps everything else. So it's kind of both teams are kind of taking that approach a little bit, which is interesting. All right, moving over back to the offense, because let's face it, the offense of the Chiefs is really what we're worried about here. How the Patriots match up in the secondary with Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill, I would say for the people like us that really are breaking down this matchup X's and O's wise, is the biggest topic of the week. What do they do with Gilmore? Because there's not like an obvious matchup for Gilmore with Hill, I don't think, because, Hill's just so fast that putting a guy one-on-one, no matter who it is, even an all-pro corner, is probably not going to go well. So it's very interesting. Obviously, the first time around, they put Gilmore on Sammy Watkins, and he took Watkins out of the game. But then, the Chiefs scored 40 points. So it was really, the strategy to me is like, you know what, that really didn't work that well.
I think the goal there is, and I think the Patriots accomplished it, even though the Chiefs put up a ton of points, they forced Mahomes and Hill to make some freak plays to put up those points. And I think if you can do that, I think you've done – and again, it's not – Chiefs fans, we're not used to sounding overly confident. But we're not. We're just like, I'm just waiting for this offense to crumble. This house of cards is going to come crashing down. But with the Chiefs offense, I would genuinely say if you make them work for it, you've done better than virtually anyone else. Because, and then the Pats really made them work for it. They made it earn it. Even in the second half, for example, that the touchdown that started the second half against with the Chiefs and the Patriots played, well, that required Mahomes. He was running to the sideline and he flipped the ball 50 yards in the air. Yeah. And if that's what beats you, well, fair enough. I think the play is to have Gilmore shadow Watkins again, because I agree. I don't think any one corner matches up well on Hill. And that's not Gilmore's a great corner. But that's a tough thing to ask of him. And then what you can do is you can put a lesser corner on Hill's side and have Devin McCourty, who's just a fantastic safety, maybe shade a little bit to that side. That seems to be successful. And what I'm expecting Belichick to do, what he's always done, is just bracket the crap out of Kelce every time the Chiefs. You can tell, Belichick says a lot of nice things about a lot of nice players. To hear him tell it, every other team is, filled with all pros. But one player that I've seen him respect on film more than any other, including like Jamal Charles when he was with the Chiefs, is Travis Kelce. Belichick, you like never see a snap where Kelce isn't bracketed. I mean, he he makes it a point to stop him. And I think that's the key there. You put Gilmore and Watkins in a perfect world for the Patriots, shut down Watkins, you bracket Kelce, make him not an option, and you force the two young guys, Mahomes and Hill, to be the ones to beat you. And if they do, well, you've done what you can.
Yeah, I think that Belichick sees Kelce as kind of the guy that moves the chains for that offense.
Yes.
Right? You know, Hill can hit the one or the two big plays, but Kelsey's the guy that really allows them to be efficient. And yes, when it's third and eight and Mahomes needs it, he's looking at Kelce. So Belichick does what Belichick does the best, and that makes you makes you play left-handed and absolutely makes you go to the other options. And the other thing that they love to do to Kelce, because I think that there are some people in the Patriots building that won't admit it, think that Kelce's a little bit of a soft player, is they like to just put a linebacker right in his face at the line of scrimmage. And every time he tries to get off the line, it's Dante Hightower, you know, jamming him with a big jam right at the line of scrimmage. And they say, all right, if you can run after that, then be my guest. And they have definitely, every time they've played the Chiefs, even going back to 2015 when they played them in the playoffs with Alex Smith, Kelce was the guy. That was the guy that Belichick has keyed on. I couldn't agree more that he has a ton of respect for him. I would assume, see, I've been advocating to put Gilmore on Hill with safety help and just load up on Hill because of how much the Hill has killed the Patriots. And they have JC Jackson now, who's been playing pretty well as the second boundary corner, kind of like Ward has stepped in for the Chiefs. And I think that JC Jackson can hold his own pretty well against Sammy Watkins. He held his own pretty well against Mike Williams last week, which is obviously another tough matchup. But I understand also kind of going with the box and one basketball strategy where it's Gilmore, you got Sammy Watkins on an island, and we're going to throw the other 10 guys over at Kelce and Hill and like try to figure it out. Now that, you know, they'll pay attention to Damian Williams, but I don't think that they're going to put as much attention on him as they would have with Kareem Hunt. So there probably is less of a chess match there. I think the biggest fear for Patriots fans, and this is really just a testament to kind of what has happened to Patrick Chung this year, he hasn't been that. He's always been the Patriots tight end stopper. He's been a very good coverage guy in against tight ends. And this year he hasn't been quite that level. So I think that, you know, putting him one-on-one against Kelce is going to be bad news for the Patriots, and putting anybody one-on-one against Tyreek Hill is going to be bad news. So like you said, I think that there's going to be four players on almost every snap, I assume, are going to be paying attention to those two guys.
I think that's the move.
Yeah, and I kind of feel like you – if you're the Patriots, you want those other guys, quote unquote, to beat you, you know, just, but it's so much easier said than done, you know, like, you know, it's, I feel like that's every team would want to do that. But to me, the other thing, the real big thing with this is that you want to keep Mahomes in the pocket. And that's another thing that's so much easier said than done. But Mahomes is so great at buying extra time for himself and then flicking it to a guy who's maybe even he does it downfield. But it's so effective, too, when he's doing it just over the middle for, like, 10-yard gains. He's able to move the chains. This is a offense that's not just good at these explosive plays. I mean, those – are obviously a staple of the offense, and they're very exciting. But the fact that, you know, Mahomes is able to be patient sometimes and just work the ball, sort of whatever, matriculated, as people like to say, on the field, you know, that's one of those things he's really good at too. So if you can make Mahomes, you know, get rid of the ball a little quicker, like we said, if they're in scramble mode, and he's outside the pocket, and Tyreek Hill is either coming back to the ball or, you know, finding an open space downfield, you're screwed. I don't care what the defense your calling is. You can't defend for those free running plays. So you just have to find ways to keep Mahomes in the pocket as much as possible, because if he starts playing playground ball, you're not going to win. You're not going to win that way. He's better at you than anybody else when it comes to that. So, you know, forcing Mahomes to stay in the pocket and, you know, not extend things, I think, is every bit as much a key to holding down those other guys as it is, you know, whatever you draw up beforehand.
That's absolutely true. And I would add to that, you want to make sure if you're keeping Mahomes in the pocket, you've got to make it an uncomfortable pocket. And I'm not trying to paint Mahomes out like he's the second coming or anything, but he really has been that good this year. His quarterback rating in the pocket's one of the highest in the league too. The problem teams have, because you're right, they got to keep him in the pocket, but he needs to be pressured within the confines of the pocket. Because if you give him a clean pocket, it's over pretty quickly too, because he gets the ball out relatively well. What the Patriots did in that last matchup, the Broncos had success doing that. The Ravens had success doing that. The Chargers, to a lesser extent, had some success doing that. I expect, if I were a betting man, I would expect to see the Patriots come out with some cover zero looks even and just blitz the crap out of Mahomes while dropping guys back into shallow zones, because that's what they were able to do to force him into some mistakes last time. Because you're absolutely right. If you can get pressure on him, if it's just pressure up the middle and you don't contain the edge, then they're playing schoolyard ball, and no one's better at that than Mahomes, Hill, and Kelsey. And like you said, I mean, that defenses lose that. If you pressure him, though, and you've got some contain on the edges, he's showing he'll get a little jumpy in the pocket and step forward too far or maybe back too far, and that'll lead to some pressure.
Yeah, I have one last question for you here, Seth, before we let you go. The weather is going to be very cold, and I don't like to make a big deal out of these types of things, but you already have like a matchup of, strength on strength. The Patriots allow the fewest deep balls in the league, and the Chiefs throw the most deep balls in the league. So you already have kind of a matchup on matchup strength. But I noticed in the first half, especially that Colts game, that Mahomes missed some throws downfield in the snow. And I was wondering if you thought that was just, you know what, everybody misses a few throws, or if maybe some of the inclement weather had an impact.
On one of them, the ball definitely slipped out of his hand. That would have been a touchdown to Hill. Here's the dirty little secret about Patrick Mahomes. He is a good downfield thrower, not a great one. Like when it comes to from the pocket. And now again, I'm not saying it's a weakness, because it's not. He is better than most. But people see the arm and expect him to be the best downfield thrower in the league. He's not. Russ Wilson probably is. He is a little above average in accuracy down the field, I'd say. When he's on the run, he's more accurate there. It's a weird deal. I don't understand it. But he from the pocket, throwing the ball down the field, he over and underthrows passes more often than people think. Now, he still ended up, technically, statistically, the best deep ball thrower in the NFL. But that was in part thanks to the existence of Tyreek Hill. He is good at it, but he's not great at it. He'll miss a few. And he actually did that when they played the Patriots. I believe early in the game, he missed maybe it was Hunt.
Yeah, on a wheel route, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so he'll miss those occasionally. Now, it's not often, but it is often enough. And I do think, the weather can be tough. It's just impossible to say. One thing I will say is that they've updated the forecast. It's not looking quite as grim as it was early on. And so I think both teams, if we're talking 20-degree weather with no snow, I don't think that's that big a deal. You guys are from New England. The Chiefs are from Kansas City. They've dealt with 20-degree weather. They just won't be. I mean, it was snowpocalypse last week. It was unbelievable. I'm from Minnesota, and I was like, wow, that's a lot of snow.
Yeah. So
I think it could affect him to an extent throwing the ball down the field, but really it's more how often they go to the well there. He missed a few more against the Colts than he normally does.
Yeah, that was my only takeaway. I mean, it wasn't his best game of the year by any means, but he was still the sidearm throw that he made to Kelsey off the hip was just like, I was like, that just defies the law of physics. He like threw it like around his offensive lineman too, and anticipated the throw. And I had some like old coach in my mentions like, oh, he's gonna get picked off one of these days. Like, no, he's not, because he knows he's open and he's anticipating the window. Like, it's like an anticipatory throw. He's just, instead of going over the top, he's doing it to the side. So it's really not like any different than what like a throw that like Tom Brady or Philip Rivers or somebody would make, like anticipating a throw like that. Yeah, he's an incredible player. I'm very much looking forward to this game, as all of us are. Seth, this is why you're the best. Thank you very much for coming on with us. Is there anything that you want to tease, maybe some matchup stuff that Patriots fans can look out for?
If Patriots fans are looking for some of my work, there's a bunch of video clips and analysis on my Twitter page at RealMNChiefsFan. If you check out the Chiefs page at The Athletic, there's quite a bit of analysis from the Colts game, including one really big film review that kind of went through a lot of the different takeaways they can get from the Colts game that kind of have more of a moving forward impact. If you're curious about Damian Williams or a Derek Nnadi might be a name that pops up every now and then in run defense. You know, some of those guys, take a look at that. I'm just so excited for this matchup. I like the Chiefs' chances at Arrowhead, but that's probably just the homer in me talking. I hope it's a great game because I feel like this could be a classic.
Yeah, everybody in New England seems to like the Patriots and everybody in Kansas City likes the Chiefs. Right? Go figure.
It's funny how that works.
Yeah, I wonder why that is. Seth, thanks again, and we'll have you on again soon.
That sounds great.
Okay, now we're going to take a few minutes to preview the NFC Championship game, obviously between the Saints and the Rams. This one has just as much intrigue, I would say, as Patriots-Chiefs. Obviously, you got kind of the young offensive mastermind in McVay against the old mastermind in Sean Payton. Pretty great matchup across the board here, Adam.
Yeah, the thing I like about it is that these are the best teams in the NFC now. Like, we're not getting any teams in there that you feel like, well, they're sort of just hot, you know?
Yeah.
These are teams that all season long have been the best teams in that conference for the most part. You know, the other teams have had, you know, nice stretches and all that, but I like the fact that you're seeing the two best teams of that conference go at it for the chance to go to the Super Bowl. And I like, you know, these are both, you know, really good offenses. Yeah, I think everybody would probably agree that the Saints have a little bit better defense. Would you agree with that, or would that be?
I think so. I think the Rams defense has been better on paper all year than it actually has been on the field. For whatever reason, that may be probably what's going on with their secondary. Just Marcus Peters just hasn't been the player that they were expecting him to be.
Yeah,
and that's a big reason why.
That was a little surprising when I was watching their game against the Cowboys too.
Yeah,
he was not good.
Yeah, and he doesn't want to tackle. You know, he's the type of player that I've never been quite as high on as some other people, because I think the interception numbers kind of jump out at people sometimes in cornerback play. And he's always been a guy that's been a really good ball hawk, but has never really been in position a ton. It's more just jumping routes and that kind of thing. And I think this year we've seen with a new scheme, maybe, you know, still a learning curve for him. We kind of see it all the time across the league where a guy in his first year in a new scheme, especially at the cornerback position, can struggle. We, you know, saw that with Stephon Gilmore here first month of the season. Malcolm Butler certainly went to Tennessee and struggled a lot in a new scheme. I think that there's some of that with it, that he's not able to kind of jump the ball as much as he would in that old Chiefs scheme that he knew so well, because he's still kind of learning of where he's supposed to be and where he's supposed to go on every play. But I think that what we're seeing, I mean, this is a pretty steep drop off for a player that has been an all pro, that's been a Pro Bowler, that they traded a lot to kind of get in the system. So it's pretty surprising to see him struggle this much.
Yeah. And the Saints also, I like, just how versatile their offense is. It always looks like, you know, they're using all their playmakers well. They're not. I just never feel when I'm watching the Saints that, oh, hey, they're ignoring this guy. Why isn't this guy getting more touches? You know, and they're just a fun offense to watch. And you can say the same thing for the Rams. That offense, you know, I loved how they just went after the running game in that game, and they didn't, you know, get away from it just to throw the ball. You know how some teams were just like, oh, we need balance, we know, let's throw the ball a little bit more. The Rams figured, you know, they found the formula that Dallas wasn't stopping the run, so they just kept doing it. And I think that was great play calling on their part. But, you know, when you look at when you look at the Saints too, another thing I like is how they use Taysom Hill.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think anybody's really doing that with a player this year.
No.
So it's kind of cool to see them do that. And I'd love to see some other team maybe get a player like that. I don't know how many Taysom Hills there are in the draft, but, you know, but get a player like that and sort of be creative. I just think that kind of stuff is always pretty cool to see.
Yeah, the Rams really surprised me in that game against the Cowboys, just how much they physically manhandled the Cowboys defense that had been one of the best run defenses in the league all year. Those rookie linebackers, one rookie and one second-year player, Jalen Smith, but Leighton Vander Esch and Jalen Smith, I mean, those guys were on the ground like half the game, it seemed like, because they were just getting blown off the ball by the Rams' offensive line. And I think that was really surprising for a lot of people to see how physical they were and how they kind of took it to them. And it almost felt like it was on purpose at times. Like the Rams going into that game heard all about how good the Cowboys' run defense was and how physical that defense was and how they've turned things around in Dallas and all this stuff. And then they came out and they just physically were the better team. And I think that that's kind of a theme that we're seeing throughout the course of all of the playoffs, is that the teams that are winning at the line of scrimmage are the teams that are advancing.
Right.
It's not necessarily the, I know the four teams that are left have probably four of the best offenses in the league, but it's not been the high flying throw it 70 yards down the field type offenses that are winning right now. They're all running the football.
Right.
And I think that what we're seeing is that, you know, whether it's defensively or offensively, the line of scrimmage is where, you know, it sounds cliche and it sounds like an old school football philosophy, but that's really where these games have been won and lost. And I think that that's pretty cool that we're kind of turning back the clock to that. Now, obviously, you know, some of it in Kansas City, maybe here in New England a little bit, had to do with the weather. It was really cold here in Foxborough. Yeah. It was snowing in Kansas City. But then, you know, the Saints and the Rams played in good condition. So it wasn't really it might have been raining in L.A. I can't remember. But the Saints obviously played in a dome. So there's no conditions there. And just to see, you know, the teams that win with offensive and defensive line play dominate those games, I think has really been the storyline of or was the storyline of the divisional weekend.
Yeah, I agree. And I like seeing teams win that way. I don't know. It's just a personal preference sometimes. I don't always like the shootout scores where, you know, people combine for 100 passes and stuff like that. It's just,
yeah,
it's less, it's, I don't know. It's just less of a preference for me anyway. But yeah, I mean, when you look at New Orleans, and it also speaks to me how quickly you can turn things around in the NFL, that we've got New Orleans and in Los Angeles, or the Rams. I don't want to say Los Angeles because you could be saying the Chargers, but the Rams, the Saints and the Rams. Okay. Like, you know, I mean, look how the Saints aren't here without the draft they had last year or the year before. And the Rams obviously just, you know, got McVay and then boom, 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 here they are. And plus they added a ton of talent, like through, you know,
through every avenue possible.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I think that's cool. It's cool to see that, you know, if you're a team that is, you know, really struggling, there's hope, you know, and I like that about the NFL. And I'm really looking forward to seeing which one of these teams advances. I think either one of these teams, if they get out of, you know, that game and make it to the Super Bowl, I think either one of those teams is capable of winning it. I don't think, you know, it's one of those teams where, say, the Patriots or the whoever or the Chiefs get there, it's, you know, automatically going to be the AFC team that has the advantage. I think it'll be, you know, I think it'll be a good Super Bowl no matter what, because of these four teams being the last four teams.
Yeah, I mean, I personally, and I think that you can have arguments that, like you said in the beginning, that some of these teams went through lulls. Obviously, the Patriots, a lot of people thinking that they're not the team that they always are, maybe a little bit worse than past iterations of the Patriots. But it kind of felt like these were the four best teams all year. And coming into the year, and really throughout the course of the season, these four teams have been the one or the two seed in their conference all year long. And we've kind of got you know, obviously they are the one and the two seed from each side, so it's kind of obvious, but we kind of got, I think, the four best teams in football this year playing, you know, for the right to go to the Super Bowl, which is ultimately, I think, what you want. Like you said, you know, when a team gets hot, maybe it's a fun storyline. Obviously, you know, the Eagles might have qualified this year as kind of that hot team, or Dallas. But it didn't work out that way, or maybe even the Chargers. And in years past, we've certainly seen hot teams win Super Bowls. You know, the Giants obviously come to mind a couple of different times. But this year, it feels like this is like a heavyweight bout between both of these matchups. This is kind of what it was all kind of building up to all season long. And I think for the Rams and the Saints, the key to that game is really going to be defense. Which defensive line, especially, because both defensive lines have a ton of talent. It's really been, and the Saints have a decent secondary too. Obviously, Marshawn Lattimore is a really good player, but it's really, I think, like I said before, going to come down to the line of scrimmage. And, you know, you got Aaron Donald and Sue on one side, and you have Cam Jordan and those guys on the other side. That's some matchup nightmares for whatever offensive line you're going to play. And so I think that's really, these offenses really do want to score a lot of points and move quickly and get those explosive plays. And sometimes that doesn't happen as easily when you got a pass rush that can get home. So this is the biggest game of Aaron Donald's career to this point, obviously. That kind of doesn't bode well for the Saints, I don't think. You know, whenever you have a guy like that, it's not a quarterback where there's a ton of pressure on him to perform. You know, I think for Goff, this could actually go the other direction. And I'm interested to see how Mahomes handles it as well. I thought Mahomes handled it very well against the Colts, and the moment really didn't seem too big for him. But I also think that the Chiefs were just a lot better than Indianapolis. So it wasn't as much. Now you're going against Belichick in an AFC championship game with the Super Bowl on the line in your first career playoffs. He could be Tom Brady, and he could take him there, or, you know, it can go south. And I think Jared Goff and Mahomes are going up against two obviously very veteran quarterbacks, and that's kind of where, you know, it's going to be an interesting divide there to see if they're going to have the same coolness. I'm very interested to see if Goff or Mahomes or both of them are up seven, up three, with, you know, 5 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, staring at the Super Bowl. You know, do they go three and out, or do they move the chains to win the game? And, you know, that's, I think, what both of these games are going to kind of come down to for both of those young quarterbacks.
I think that was the thing I was probably – it was one of the things I was, I've been probably most impressed with the Rams this year, is their ability to do that, you know.
I'm sure last year losing to Atlanta probably helped them a lot.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. They've finished games, even in the regular season, where they've been in that spot where they've needed a first down to close it out, and they did. You know, like, what was the game where Gurley was running and he just sort of slid towards the end zone? And
it was
in L.A. I forget who they were playing against now, but it was one of those types of games that was going back and forth, and the other team, you know, you know, would have scored, you know, not would have, but like the game felt like a shootout.
And,
you know, the Rams just didn't let it get, you know, get to the point where it could be tied or anything like that. So now, God, I watched the whole game. I forget who they were playing though, but they do that, you know, like girl, you know, that's where it's great having a guy like Gurley or any of their running backs, as, you know, they do a good job of closing games out that way. And but, you know, you look at New Orleans, you know, they're also great at that too. I mean, who else do you want in that game? Well, if you're comparing Goff and Breeze as to who you want the ball in their hands in a situation like that, it's Breeze.
Right. Well, Breeze was down 14-0 against Philly, and even though they didn't blow doors off of Philly from that point on or anything, it just felt like there was no panic.
Right.
You know, and they were the top seed. They were the home team. They had all the reason in the world to kind of feel the pressure of the earth on their shoulders in that situation. And obviously you had the Nick Foles magic and the Eagles coming off winning the Super Bowl. And it seemed like the Eagles were just never going to lose in the playoffs again. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Saints just kind of stayed the course. They didn't change up their game plan. Like you said, they kept running the football. They kept doing what they wanted to do, and they ended up winning the game. And, you know, as great as Drew Brees was, Michael Thomas is just uncoverable.
Oh, yeah.
And he's another one of those guys that over the last couple of years they've accumulated through the draft. I mean, to get Michael Thomas and Alvin Kamara in the draft for that team, and obviously Ramchick, the left tackle, too, that's just over the last couple of years. I mean, like, Patriots fans, like, would dream of a draft like that where they can get that kind of skill player talent in here. And, you know, it's just pretty amazing. I agree that the team building of both of these teams, the Rams and the Saints, it's pretty cool to see how – you know, the Saints were 7-9, 7-9, 7-9.
Right.
And they had, you know, one of the worst defenses in the league for about almost a half decade. And now they've really been able to turn that around. And I think are probably in this tournament along with the Chiefs right now. You know, obviously, home field helps it. But I think that they're probably the favorites to win the Super Bowl. So that's a pretty remarkable turnaround. And obviously, we know all about the Rams. But all right, time for teases. What do you got coming up this week?
Well, I am doing a lot of, like I said in previous ones, recruiting stuff. There's in terms of talking to high school coaches and stuff, and I'm learning about a lot of different guys, especially in the younger classes, who are potential Division I players and guys they should keep an eye on. I talked to the Lowell coach, John Florence. And he's got several guys who have that type of potential. One of them is Brendan Ty, and he is a wide receiver safety. And at the Division I level, he's being heard as mostly a safety, but he's just like a hard-hitting kid who can also make plays in the air on either side of the ball. It's
a very valuable skill set nowadays.
Yeah. And, he's got two linemen, a junior and a sophomore. The junior is Louis Kadeem and the sophomore is Ty Chan. Louis is about, 6'4", 250. Ty is about 6'5", 255, so around that. And they're both tackles and they both play on defense for them too. Or they can. And, these are very, you know, young sort of raw guys that a college program can mold, at whatever level they decide. And obviously some of them, it's a ways away, you know, those conversations. But, you know, there's some pretty talented players over there in Lowell. So I get into them a little bit and I talk to the coach a little bit and he, you know, sort of talks about, you know, the strengths and weaknesses and all that stuff. So it's, that's in there today. It's actually there right now. And there's more of that type of stuff on Mass Varsity. And we're also getting into a lot of the strategies, that BC and UMass are implementing in this signing day. And it's been fun. Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds great. I think that now is a very cool time for recruiting and all that kind of stuff. There's Jalen Hurts transferring today to Oklahoma.
Oh, man, yeah.
Yeah, there's like a lot going on, you know, of kind of making plans for next year for a lot of these guys and beyond. So that's very cool. At CLNSmedia.com, I will be in Kansas City this weekend, freezing my butt off there with everybody else at Arrowhead Stadium. So we'll be, you know, wall-to-wall coverage with Mike Petraglia and myself on Sunday. Obviously, up on the site now, looked back at the Chargers game as best as I could. Game Pass and the coaches' film are not getting along right now. It's the whole point of contention. But I looked at it as best I could, looking at some of the different things the Patriots did on offense to put together what was, I think, one of the best offensive performances that I've seen out of Brady and Belichick and Josh McDaniels in quite some time. Just the completeness and the execution, the high level of execution that we saw was pretty awesome. So go check that out. And then obviously I'll have more, you know, Kansas City Patriots matchup type breakdown stuff down the way here. And then Pats Chiefs on Sunday. It's, you know, after all the talk all year long, this isn't a good Patriots team. This team's bad compared to past years. And here we are again. You know, one game from the Super Bowl, eighth straight AFC Championship game. Enjoy it while it lasts, people, because it's not going to last forever. I promise you, even though it feels like it might, it's really not going to. These guys are going to get old and they are going to retire, and we're going to have, you know, other coaches and other quarterbacks that aren't Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. And we'll be kind of reminiscing at that point about these days. But until then, we are still going. And next week, Adam and I will be back, I hope, previewing the Super Bowl a little bit and getting into some early Super Bowl type stuff. And obviously we'll take a look back at the AFC Championship game a little bit more than we usually do, since we have that bye week if they do advance. If not, we'll do some kind of like a season recap and just look back at you know, over the course of the year and recap kind of what went wrong in Kansas City if they do end up losing. But until then, signing off for Adam Kirchen, I want to thank our guest Seth Kaiser one more time for coming on with us as well. I'm Evan Lazar. Thanks for listening.